Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Diva of Days of Our Lives. I'm Laurie Baker. Since the Diva began this series, we have interviewed the stars who have carried our favorite stories, character actors who have supported them, and directors who have guided them. Today we have our first guest who has created the storylines we've enjoyed so much over the years, head writer Sherry Anderson. Sherry has written for many soaps, Santa Barbara, Falcon Crest, Another World, Guiding Light, General Hospital, and of course, Days of Our Lives. She and her writing team won the Daytime Emmy Award for Outstanding Writing, both for Days of Our Lives in 1976 and Santa Barbara in 1991. Her team also won a Writers Guild of America Award in 1990 for Santa Barbara. She's widely credited with co-creating some of the most memorable super couples in daytime television history. Her couples include John and Marlena, Bo and Hope, Steve and Kayla, and Shane and Kimberly from Days of Our Lives, as well as the legendary Luke and Laura on General Hospital. So, Sherry, thank you for joining us today. Welcome.
Well, thank you. This is very exciting.
It's very exciting for us, too. You were telling me before the interview you had an announcement you wanted to share with the Days of Our Lives fans, so take it away.
Well, yes, I know there's been a lot of speculation about the novels that Ken has been talking about in the press that are going to be a series of fiction novels that actually deal with some of the characters who aren't on the canvas at the moment, and I am lucky enough to be writing them. So this is sort of an announcement. Thank you. Yeah, it's a very exciting thing for me because it's really interesting to be able to write without any outside interference at all. I've been giving free rein. And as I said, the first one went to the publisher 2 weeks ago, and it is due out in November, so I hope everybody looks for them.
What characters are, can you tell us what the characters the first novel will be about?
Well, the first novel basically, and I'm not going to give away too much story, but it basically is about John and Marlena, who have been off canvas. And also it opens with Sean and Belle, and there are some other appearances by people such as Shane, Bo, even though he's on canvas, he still has a way to appear in the book, Jack and Jennifer, Abby, you know, a number of people that we haven't seen for a while. So, as I said, it's been very exciting to be able to bring them back to life.
Wow. And then these are actually books that are creating new stories for them? Or
Absolutely.
Is it like a rewriting of old storylines?
No, it actually picks up after they were written off the show, and it actually starts like in August of this year. The stories will start then and then sort of culminate just before November when it's the 45th anniversary. So, you know, as I said, it was very exciting for me, and it's been a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to the next one. I'm just getting started on that now.
Ah, and how often are these books going to come out?
Well, at the moment, there are three in the pipeline, and the first one is scheduled to come out in November, the second one in February, and the third one in May. That could adjust a little bit, but that's where we're headed at the moment. So, you know, there'll be a pretty continuous series. So for people who, you know, enjoy reading about those characters and, as I said, seeing them come to life, and we're going to have an online component as well. So I think it's going to be pretty interesting.
Awesome. And by the way, people can keep up with you on your new Facebook page that you started this week.
Yes, I did. I know there was some controversy because I looked at it myself, and I know people were wondering if it was a fan, but it actually wasn't a fan. It was me, but with Jody Earhart, who has been a longstanding fan of mine and a good friend, and she and I kind of decided it would be a good time because of the books coming out. So, yes, that is indeed me, and I will be going and answering questions if people have them. So please come to Sherry Anderson at Facebook.
Awesome. And while we're at it, while we're remembering, why don't you tell us what your husband's up to with his new show?
Oh, as I said, it's pretty interesting because I am on the radio today, and my husband's name is Pekka Thomas. He has a company called Vidlet.com. But aside from that, he is going to be the sidekick to somebody who people don't always recognize his name, but they know him very, very well. His name is Bernie Taupin, and he is Elton John's lyricist and writing partner, and he's written things such as Candle in the Wind, Rocket Man, so many hits over the years. And he is doing a show called American Roots Radio that's going to be on Sirius on the Loft, and it starts the weekend of July 4th. And as I said, my husband is going to be his engineer and sidekick, so we're both doing radio at the moment. So that's fun.
That's great. I do have a good question from the chat room about your books. Are they going to be available to buy in stores or only through NBC?
No, from what I understand, now we'll see what happens. They're being published by Sourcebooks, which is the same company that did Ken's memoir and is doing the coffee table book, which is going to be absolutely fantastic, by the way. I've seen little bits of it, and it's going to be terrific, coming out in November as well. And they are planning to actually, it'll be on Amazon.com, but also they are scheduling things like Target and Walmart and Kmart and all of those things, so it'll be widely available.
Wonderful. Well, you have a caller on the line. Let me bring them on. 724 area code, you're on the air.
Hi, Sherry. This is Carrie.
Hi, you're here. Okay.
Yes, hi, Carrie. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well.
Thank you so much for you finally got it together.
And, I know we've been talking about this for a long time. But one thing I was going to say, Carrie, the reason I know I've put off this interview a number of times, and it was really because the books were in the works, and I was hoping to be able to talk about them. And until this last week, and it went to the publisher, I really wasn't able to do that. So if I was stalling, that was the reason. Now we have something good to talk about.
Yeah, we do. I appreciate you breaking news on our show. We always love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, great scoop. So, can you just tell us for our listeners, you started out as a script writer and then moved on to becoming a collaborative head writer. Could you just clarify what the difference is between those two jobs?
Well, you know, they're very, very different, and things have changed a bit over the years, but when I first started, and boy, was I lucky to meet Pat Falkensmith, who, in my opinion, is one of the greatest writers that Daytime ever had. You know, she was an Erna Phillips, Bill Bell, in that circle. And she hired me as her assistant, and I worked 2 days a week as her assistant, and what happened is she would dictate everything to me. So it kind of went through my fingers, and that's sort of how I got trained. And, you know, one thing I was going to say, I understand Bill Bell also really credits Pat with a lot of the major, major successes of Days of Our Lives, because she took over when it went to an hour, and that's really when I started working with her. And, you know, the way it's really divided is there is a head writer or several head writers, then under them there will be associate head writers who are really generally usually breakdown writers, and so they will write the narrative for a show. And then that goes to the script writers, and the script writers then do all the dialogue, and then it goes to an editor who makes sure it's all the continuity is there and the characters are, you know, as they should be. And then it gets to the producers, and then hopefully they don't have too many notes, and the whole process goes again. So, you know, it's constantly a machine, and people would always say, what is writing a soap like? And it's really... because, you know, you have all of these different elements and you really need to have a cohesion about it. And you have a certain amount of sets that you can use and you have a certain amount of actors you can use. So, you know, it's a really daunting job. But, you know, the head writer is basically responsible for all the story and has final say on casting and everything like that. So that's how it has evolved over the years and was back then. Although we used to only have maybe 7 writers total and now they might have 15.
Uh-huh. Were you, when you were paired together with other writers like Tom Racina or Margaret DePriest and such, how did you work together to create story?
Well, you know, the thing that is really important, it's kind of funny. It's so important to have somebody that you really kind of are on the same wavelength with. And so in the early days, it was a little different in that teams would kind of move together. You'd start working with somebody and you really clicked. And if the show was working, you know, you might stay on that same show or somebody would steal you away and the whole writing team would move. And you really got to the point of knowing each other so well that you almost didn't have to discuss what the next scenes were going to be. But it's really a lot of, on the weekends, a lot of times, sitting in a room and, you know, seeing what the canvas is and just, you know, brainstorming. And somebody throws out an idea and somebody kicks it back. And, you know, that's why people will say, oh, well, you created this story or you created that character. And yes, you know, you do create story and you do create character, but so much of it is collaborative because you get a piece from this person and a piece from that person, and then, you know, it's you're the one who has the final say as the head writer. But there always has to be somebody who's in charge. So, you know, usually there'll be a head writer and they'll have a couple of co-head writers with them, and then the head writer basically is the one with the final say with the executive producer of the show. But, you know, you look at the canvas and you hopefully say what hasn't been on the show before. you know, what is the dynamic of all of the other stories that are on the show so that you're not repeating the same story, you know, so that everybody kind of has an individual point of view. And that's what you hope to do, and then have, you know, different financial, you know, arenas for people and different classes of people so that, you know, it really appeals to a broad audience, hopefully.
Was there ever a time when you would have a conflict with one of the writers you were collaborating with about a character or a story where you'd envision something and they'd envision something different?
Yeah, I mean, there was a situation, and I'm not going to say who the writer was, and I'm not going to exactly say what the story was, but it was about a medical situation. And at that point, she really had the final say, and it was dealing with a medical condition that I felt the way it was being told was not representative of what really happened, and it was sort of cheating the audience. And I really fought it and lost. So, you know, sometimes you just have to accept the loss and move on because, you know, you're doing 52 weeks of television a year. So as I've said to people in the past, in daytime, sometimes it's fabulous and sometimes it's not so fabulous. And that's because you have to do it so quickly. You know, you talk to anybody else that does primetime or features and they're in shock that you could produce an hour a day 52 weeks a year.
I'm curious, as a head writer, do you get paid extra every time you come up with an original character? I heard that from somewhere. I was just wondering if that was really true, if head writers actually get paid extra.
Well, you know, it isn't. And the reason that has been out there is because in primetime, it is true. If you're writing a primetime show and you develop a character and there's a spinoff of that character, you own the character. But in daytime, no. If that were true, we'd all be living in huge mansions somewhere. But no, actually, like Corday Productions and NBC own the characters. So you have no additional monies that come from that. And, you know, if the ratings go up or go down, doesn't make a difference. You get paid the same amount of money.
Uh-huh.
So that's a fallacy. But I know people would always think that because they would say, oh, that's why somebody brought in a new character. And that really isn't the reason. A lot of times you're bringing in a new character because it's a new character that's clean and, you know, you can start fresh without a lot of real confusing backstory to try to sift through, you know, because that can be a problem. And I know on some of the shows, and especially Days, you know, I think has gone through so many different changes in character. I know I would go back to a show and say, wait a minute, how did Victor, you know, suddenly not, wasn't, well, how come Caroline still isn't the love of his life, you know? So you just have to deal with that and move on and write the best that you can, hopefully from your heart.
Have you ever felt like you needed to rewrite history to make a plot work?
Well, sometimes, yeah, when you say having to rewrite history, a classic one, you know, is good old John and Marlena, although when you say rewriting history, all that we were rewriting originally was that, you know, John Black, Roman, we should say, disappeared and came back as John Black, but that was just because of the actor, the loss of the actor. But I personally, as a writer, hate rewriting history. I think it cheats the audience. I think that, you know, if we can't come up with something fresh, then maybe we're in the wrong business, in my opinion, because I really do have a problem with rewriting history. Sometimes you don't realize you've done it, you know, and then suddenly go, oops, I didn't know that happened in the past. But especially now with access to so much over the Internet, you know, you really know what the prior story was. You know, 10 years ago, you didn't have as many good archives. So it was a lot of, you know, what people remembered as far as story, and you did the best you could.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hate rewriting history. It drives me crazy, just as
yeah,
a viewer.
I just think, as I said, I think it cheats the audience, you know, because if I commit to somebody, I want to commit to them for a reason, and I don't want to think, oh, I'll commit to them half-heartedly because I know it's going to change anyway. You know, that I bring up Stefano. I mean, I remember killing him off, and suddenly we blew him up so that he was dead, and then suddenly came back after another incarnation, and there he was again. Said, uh-oh, and he kept coming back and coming back and coming back. And I love the character of Stefano. I think he's fantastic. But again, I think suddenly the audience loses faith in the show if you're not careful. you know.
Yeah, well, you know, with Stefano, I never minded him coming back from the dead, but I did mind exactly the incident you were talking about where he falls off a burning bridge with a brain tumor, and you're like, there's no way he can survive this, and then he comes back, and I was like, okay, he came back. At least explain it. That's what I loved about the early years with Stefano when he would fake his death, is they would explain how he did it. So you're like, oh, he was so clever. That was genius that he managed to do that, and now we just take it for granted he did it, no matter how crazy it was, and I don't like that. I think that also kind of dumbs down the stories, you know. We have another caller on the line, so let me go ahead and get them on here. 814 area code, you're on the air.
Hello, Sherry?
Yes.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes. Hi, this is Marianne. How are you tonight?
I'm excellent. How are you, Marianne?
Very good. It's so nice to have you here, and I'm glad we had a wait for you to come on the show. I mean, that's great news about you writing the books. I'm really anxious.
Yeah, and I have to say, as I keep saying, I'm not trying to sell them too much, but, you know, when I finished the last page, I went, oh, I like that. I felt very satisfied by what happened during the book, so I hope everybody else does too.
Yeah, that's a good idea, like telling, you know, the characters, like to know what's happening to John and Marlena and you know, the characters that are off canvas right now. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't necessarily negate them coming back at any particular point. You know, that's a reality too. But it just keeps them alive, which I like.
Right. And thank you for writing all the great super couples and the romance, and you just knew how to do it. Perfect.
Well, you know, as I said, I was trained by Pat Falkensmith, who was all about romance and all about art and all about, you know, enticing people and you know, giving people something to look forward to. You know, that's one of the problems I have right now is there are so many spoilers that you think, okay, do I need to watch? You know, so that I think is unfortunate because it used to be that you just couldn't wait until the next day to find out what was going to happen. You couldn't go to the internet and see it ahead of time.
Right. Well, my question has to do, I'm a big Tony and Anna fan, and I know you helped write for them a little bit back in the 80s, Okay. My question is, if Teo would have stayed in 1985, was there any kind of storyline plan for Tony and Anna, and what direction would you have liked to take those characters
It's an interesting story about Teo because... you know, he and I have become very good friends, and in fact, he and I have written three screenplays together.
And how are those coming along?
Well, you know, they're in my opinion, they're also really terrific. He and I have very different sensibilities, but at the same time, we have a lot of the same interests. And, you know, they're kind of timeless because they're, you know, one is a thriller and one, you know, is a real family drama, another is a historical drama. But it's funny, when Teo left in 85, he and I had become friends a bit. And I usually the writers and actors don't become friends that easily. They usually try to keep you apart because if you like somebody, you'll write better for them. And if you don't like somebody, you have a tendency not to write for them. But because we're all human, you know.
Of course.
So it can be to their benefit or to their or not. But when he left, I didn't really think he would leave. And so he said, I just walked up into the fog. And I kept saying, but I know you're going to come back. And he didn't.
Yeah.
I loved Tony and
He keeps
Anna.
Coming back, doesn't he?
He does, which is great.
Yes, he does.
He has such a great presence. You know, let's face it, he's a dashing guy who can add a lot to
the
canvas.
So you wouldn't have any idea where you would have taken those characters at the time if you would have stayed?
It was so long ago. But again, to me, they had an element of comedy, and they also had high romance. So, you know, they would have ended up on some kind of adventure and probably still swirling around the art world because, you know, Teo is so passionate about that, and as I am. And I think, you know... manipulating, but at the same time charming, you know, and really being able to see, you know, him sweeping her off her feet. But, you know, in any super couple, you got to keep them together and then take them apart and get them together.
Take them apart, right.
Take them apart, because it's the longing that you know, is what everybody really looks for, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we're still hoping to see him back.
Oh, I don't blame you. That would be fabulous.
Yeah.
of course,
okay.
I have no control over any of that, so who knows, you may
show
us one of the books.
Yeah, and we'd like to see you back, too.
Oh, well, thank you. At the moment, I'm just really excited about the books. That's sort of my focus.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's exciting. Yes, I'll have to make sure I go out and get one.
Well, thank you. I hope so. Get two.
Okay. 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 Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thanks, Marianne. Bye. So speaking of super couples, I was wondering, since you wrote so many super couples, how would you determine what the makings would be for a good super couple? Would it be, you know, actor chemistry, or just from the characters that you started on the page?
Well, you know, usually it's the characters that you start on the page, and then, of course, it's critical casting, you know. But so many times, as an example, when Tony came in to Days of Our Lives, he was with Liz. And I think his audition scene was with Kimberly initially. And then when Anna came in, and she was really coming in for Roman, in a sense, but then you see the actors, and hopefully, you know, you're watching the show, seeing how they interact, seeing what the spark is, and creating story, you know, because you can't buy chemistry. And, you know, sometimes there are actors that the chemistry is that they don't get along, but that it comes across as a spark on screen. And so sometimes they can work really, really well. But, you know, Beau and Hope were always intended to be a couple. They were intended to be a super couple. When Patch came in, Patch was really sort of a short-term character. And then I thought that was one thing that I really enjoyed, was realizing that the one person that he could fall in love with that would drive her brother crazy is bringing Kayla back. So it was really creating Patch and Kayla. And fortunately, the actresses, both of them who played Kayla, were just gangbusters with Steven. So, you know, we were really, really lucky. But, you know, it just depends. Luke and Laura, you know, when we were writing Luke and Laura, that sort of already existed, but we saw the chemistry that they had and the dynamic that they had. And, you know, their story, I don't know if people even remember, but they went on the run together.
Oh, yes, everyone remembers.
But that story wasn't even intended to be a story. But what happened is Rick and Monica were the summer story, and suddenly, I wish I could remember the actor who played it because he was so fantastic, and suddenly I can't remember. But he got a movie and was gone for 7 weeks, and so we all said, oops, got to come up with a summer story. And Pat came up with Luke and Laura on the Run, and I was fortunate enough to be able to write a lot of those scripts. So being able to really infuse that with a lot of romance, you know, that was sort of my contribution in those days, and that was fantastic. You know, but that wasn't planned. It was just suddenly, let's see how it works, and the characters, the actors were really competent, and there we went. So sometimes you really luck out, and sometimes you'll get chemistry that doesn't work, and you have to jettison a story because you don't want to jam it down somebody's throat, you know, if it's not working.
Well, have you ever had a storyline that you thought was going to be a sure hit, and then it turned out not to work out?
Well, the one story that, unfortunately, yeah, and it really wasn't even that much of a love story, but it was really with Patsy Pease and Kimberly, because Patsy, as I think everybody knows, had been going through some personal issues, and she and we discussed the possibility of doing a split personality storyline, and unfortunately, it really wasn't good for her health, and the story just didn't work. It tanked, and we were all upset about it because of how it affected her personally, and then also because, you know, we had invested so much in it and felt that it was a really strong story, that was very disappointing because Patsy is such a phenomenal actress. She was absolutely great, and one of the favorite stories I ever wrote was about her. So that one, yeah, just did not work. But as far as love stories, I'm trying to think. I can't think of that many that actually had love stories that didn't work.
Uh-huh.
Off the top of my head.
I'm just curious, what was the Patsy Pease storyline that was your favorite that you were just talking?
Well, it was really about abuse.
Yes.
And the thing is, it was, again, one of those stories that touched so many people when, you know, the audience realized that she had, in fact, been abused by her uncle. We were able to really delve into you know, the personal ramifications of that, and we got a lot of response from people. We got a lot of people that were touched by that. And we have done alcoholism stories that did the same, you know. So those are really great. You know, I can't say enough about when you affect people that way, it really means something. You know, it's very personal.
Yes. Okay, we have another caller. 208 area code, you're on the air. Oops, hold on a second.
Hey, Sherry.
There we are. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I started watching probably at the end of your at least your first send-on days. It was right when Kayla first returned to town and caught Patch's eye. But one of the things that I've seen discussed on various message boards, and I think it's an interesting topic, is if the super couple thing is kind of self-limiting in terms of you have a long story that, you know, brings these two people together through, you know, a gazillion trials, and you finally get them married, and then, you know, what do you do? I mean, how many times can you, you know, split them up and put them back together before, you know, it just doesn't have the same meaning anymore? So, go ahead.
No, I said that's why it's so important to make sure that you don't negate who the characters actually are, but give them more than just a love story. You know, there has to be an umbrella story going over everything. And part of that, let's even talk about Kim and Shane. Part of their love story was really wrapped up in the entire Caroline Victor revelation that Victor was Beau's father. And that was, again, a story that I did that I really loved because it had so many dynamics. It was such a long arcing story. You know, we had it planned out for months and months and months and months and months. And so there were little tidbits dropped here and there as to, you know, who was the child? Was it Kim? Was it Beau? You know, who was it?
Uh-huh.
That, you know, if you have an overarching story and you can keep bringing them together and, in a sense, pulling them apart, to me, I don't think it can ever end. You know, I think it can always be there as long as the actors, you know, can pull it off. And most of the ones that are super couples, they're super couples because they're super actors. You
right.
know, they manage to fulfill what you're looking for as a writer.
Right. I just, you know, when you see it happen with Steve and Kayla, I mean, I know Steven left. I realize this was after you had left, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then so you kill one off. But one of the things that's kind of been talked about with Beau and Hope and John and Marlena who stayed, Jack and Jennifer as well, you know, is that if they're always supposed to be together, you know, how do you keep creating that inherent tension once you've gotten them together, you've gotten married, they have kids, you know, and it's just I always was kind of curious what your sort of idea for keeping that process going. Once you've established a couple that's supposed to be together, you know, as soulmates forever, how much can you keep going back and forth with that?
Well, I think one of the things too is when you keep talking about that, it helps to not have the actors in my opinion on screen every day. You've got to make the audience want to see them together, not just see them together every day. So they have to be doing things independently, and when they are doing things independently, often you know, people are all people, and even though somebody might be a couple, they have different points of view, and they are going to disagree, and especially if they have children, or they have, especially now, it's so tough, I think, for men and women to try to figure out what their place is anymore. You know, in the 60s and 70s and 80s even, you know, it was pretty clear-cut about, you know, the men's role and the women's role and all of that. And now, you know, I feel so sorry for guys and girls who are 20 and 25 because they don't have the clear-cut direction that some of us did, I think. So I think you walk a fine line. But, you know, it's all about trying to come up with those differing points of view that can keep the tension alive.
Well, and for what it's worth, I agree with you. I'm on that side that if you focus, if you don't lose the characters inside the couple and, you know, remember that they are individual characters as well as a couple, you can find those places to keep
mm-hmm.
that attention and that, you know, those separations or whatever that creates that dramatic longing and story within that without having to bring in, you know, a third party every other year to, you know, split them up or, you know, kill somebody off or, you know, whatever,
yeah,
amnesia.
Yeah. You know,
but it just doesn't seem...
No, go ahead. I was just, there's always a situation about, you know, somebody comes in and they're gaslighted and, you know, things that we think are real suddenly seem as though they're not. And, you know, people all have emotions, highs and lows, and people are vulnerable and make mistakes. And sometimes those mistakes can be the thing that pull you apart and then draw you back together when you can overcome them. You know, but that to me is the strength of super couples. But, you know, I think you also need to be able to have more than one or two so that you so that you're not just focused solely on them. And you have, as I said, all different dynamics with different age groups and all of that. So, you know, but it's funny, in soaps you talk about story, and I still remember, you know, when suddenly we were saying, what do you mean people can have cell phones because they can reach anybody anytime they want? Because, you know, we used to have all those conventions where suddenly you didn't have a dime for, you know, or a quarter for the phone. Now people just pick up their cell phone and they can reach anybody at any time unless they're in a, you know, bad area. So, you know, there are a lot of challenges that come across, and suddenly there'll be a great, and you say, wow, a cure for cancer or heart disease, that's fantastic. And then you go, there goes another story impediment that's gone. That sounds very callous, but you say, oops, now I got to come up with something else. Because it's got to be, in my opinion, something that is emotionally based. You know?
Right.
I would say,
thank you for
calling.
Your
head, you're in trouble.
Yeah, we have another call on the line. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, yeah, I actually remember that when we were talking about that, like Tony running to like stop Renee's wedding with David.
Right,
and
exactly.
If he'd had a cell phone, none of that would have been a problem.
None of that would have happened. Nope, he would have been there. That's exactly who I was talking about, too. You know, suddenly it's like, oh. But, you know, you have to be able to write fast.
Yeah.
As I've said about daytime television, well, there are a couple of things. People talk about prime time, and they say at prime time you've got a beginning, middle, and end, and daytime is beginning, middle, and endless. So, you know, but you've got to be able to have stories that are not endless. You know, the stories need to have some sort of cap to satisfy the audience, and then
right.
You have a new story that's bubbling up underneath that.
Okay. Well, let me get this other caller on. 949 area code, you're on the air.
Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
Hi. I just first want to thank you so much because I grew up watching Days when you were writing it, and it was just, it was better than Disney. It was like love stories come to life, the fairy tale, everything, but there were really heartfelt and family-related storylines as well as the romance, and I truly did love it, and it was such a highlight for me, and I wanted to thank you for that. And I know... people are still talking about your storylines to this day where they aren't talking about storylines from 20 and 30 years ago on any other soap. So I think that says something about how special your work was to so many of us. So thank you. The most memorable.
You know, I'll stress something again when you say that, and I've said this before. You know, when I was head writing, whether it was with Maggie DePriest, and Maggie was the head writer and I was her co-head writer, Leah Lehman and Tom Racina, who were my co-head writers, you know, there are so many people that contribute. So when people say, we loved your stories, I like to think that they were all of our stories.
Yeah, but you were the common thread. You were there for Luke and Laura
you.
And Steve and Kayla and Bo and Hope, and you were, you know, there's something to be said about your work as well. So they were here, I think, too. thank you very much. I guess my question is, and I have so many of them, first of all, I hope that your novels become web soaps or something, you know, that we can see, and because I know that that would be amazing. But I guess my real question is, was there ever a scene or a story that an actor played that you wrote that really, like, took you in a different direction or made you, like, stand up and go, wow, that wasn't what I expected, either in a good way or in a bad way?
Boy, you know.
But probably I meant in a good way.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, it's hard for me to say...
To remember that,
because
generally
what you hope and what is supposed to happen is, you know, once it gets out of the writer's hands and it goes to the directors and the producers and the actors, everybody's supposed to make it a little bit better. You know, that's the hope. So sometimes you would look at something and go, wow, I didn't expect that, as you're saying, and I wish I could come up with something specific. But I remember certain scenes that you would see and think the actors brought so much more to it. I still remember when Luke raped Laura, and that, you know, that was so much more complex a story than people always give it credit for. They'll say, oh, well, Laura fell in love with her rapist. And that really wasn't the story. You know, they had a long-standing relationship. It was the first time that date rape had really been discussed. And, you know, it was really, really, we investigated it a lot and had a lot of feedback for that. And the characters who were involved in it, you know, they suffered for what they did. They, you know, they both, you know, he went too far. He should have stopped, and she should have not said, oh, it was somebody else, you know. But I still remember Emily McLaughlin in scenes with Jeannie Francis, you know, after the rape. And I looked at those, and I'm getting chills as I'm sitting here thinking about it, because she just brought so much more to it than any of us expected. That
I think part of it is the era that it aired in, because people really weren't talking about it as much. There wasn't as much of an awareness of how much that occurred and how it affected women, really. I think the problem for me personally with storylines, at least is just on soaps now, is that they just do it so often and they skip over the ramifications, and it's just like it never happens sometimes, just so they can go on with the character story. And that,
yeah,
to me is kind of cheapening everything, you know, the characters, the emotional value of the story. They just don't think about that anymore the way you did, you know, and that's really the problem more than anything else these days, I think.
Well, you know, as I said, you know, to the girls when I talked about doing this interview, in reality, I actually don't watch the show these days.
Right.
I really don't watch most of them, because as a former head writer, it's very easy to look and say, I wouldn't do that, I wouldn't do this, and it's so unfair, because I'm sure when I was writing, there were people saying to me, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done this. And it's such a tough job. Excuse me. It's such a tough job that the fact that it even gets on the air is fantastic. But I was saying to somebody the other day, and it was actually Greg Ming at Days of Our Lives, and I have to say he's really the one who was behind getting me to write these novels, and he was pretty dogged about it, and I so thank him for that, because, as he said, I think you could have fun, and I just having the most fun writing that I've ever had, by the way, writing this.
I wish they'd bring you on the show to write the show instead.
Well,
so sorry.
You know, the thing is, I don't think that would happen, and FYI, you know, Dina came into the business as my assistant, so I've known Dina for many, many years, and she's a really, really talented girl, and Gary I worked with on Santa Barbara, Chris Weitzel I worked with on Another World, I've worked with so many of those other writers, and they're all terrific. So I don't really know what the show is doing right now, because I haven't been watching. But
Yeah. The
thing I am able to do with the books is really go into all of those emotional ramifications for the characters. And to me, that's what's so important. But I was saying to Greg, when I was first brought up as a writer under Pat, who, again, I think was the most brilliant writer I worked with, you know, after every show, we would write down what were the threads, what are we missing emotionally, what are we going to do next, so that it was really getting into all of those areas. It was really thinking about, you know, how does this affect people emotionally, and how are we going to affect the audience emotionally, and not screw the audience around, but get them to really
exactly. Understand,
yeah. You know. So
I was
so lucky, because I had that training, you know, so... You know, I just have to say thank you to the people that mentored me.
Yes. Thank you so much again for doing the chat.
Thank you for calling in. Carrie, you're still here?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah. Did you say you wanted to ask her something?
Yeah. When an actor is at the end of their contract or they're going to quit or get fired, do you relish those situations? Like, oh, I get to kill somebody off? And how much time do you have to come up with an ending for a character? Because, I mean, some of the endings for some of the characters were awful. I think, Jed Allen's character, he went to get the mail and he never came back. I don't remember that.
And I don't know if I was around then, but I loved Jed and Deirdre. They were fantastic. And, you know, that addresses the whole thing about super couples again. Deirdre and Jed were amazing together. And I don't know, I really don't remember why he left. But, you know, there's the thing about Teo that I just mentioned with him saying, oh, yes, I'm going to be going off the show. And I'm saying, oh, no, you'll be back. And he wasn't. And so suddenly I thought, just sent him off into the ether there. But there were a couple of situations, as an example, Stacey Greeson. When I came back to the show in 92, and the reason I came back to the show in 92 was I had written a spinoff of Days of Our Lives called Manhattan Lives for Deirdre and Drake, and Another World was in possibility of getting cancellation at that point. And so I was writing that with Gene Palumbo, and what happened was the ratings on the show were just in dire straits. So Jim Reilly was scheduled to come in, I think, 9 months later, and I was hired to come in sort of to bridge that and take over the writing at that point. And I came in, and suddenly Stacey Greeson had just, you know, Isabella had just married John, and she was not re-signing. And because I am a person who believes that if suddenly somebody commits to somebody saying this is a fantastic, you know, it's a great relationship, they're madly in love, and 3 months later she leaves. Mm-hmm. Said, how do we get her to leave so that it doesn't cheat the audience? Right. And which is why we actually, and actually Elizabeth Harrower, Susan Seaforth Hayes' mother, came up with the idea of pancreatic cancer. And that, again, was, it was a very heartbreaking, but for me, very fulfilling storyline, because of being able to deal with the passion that these two had and ending that in a loving way. Now, ironically, my father died of pancreatic cancer 10 years ago, and I now realize I didn't write it exactly correctly. It was a little more glamorous than the reality. But, it, you know, that to me was a moment for me that was very fulfilling. Generally, you know, there was one couple that was on, and I didn't realize that their contracts were up, and I was told I had to have a story for them, and I didn't. And they said, well, if you don't have one tomorrow, they're off the show. And I didn't have one, and they both got fired, and I got blamed for it. And I was like, ah! But, you know, those are the things you have to deal with when you're writing, and, you know, you have to take the hits. But sometimes, it's, you know, you say, great, you know, this gives me an opportunity to come up with something that I hadn't thought of before. And then sometimes you just moan and say, gosh, wish they weren't leaving.
Mm-hmm. We have another caller. Let me just bring this person on. 808 area code, you're on the air.
Hi, Sherry. This is Madeline.
Hello, Madeline. Hi.
Thank you so much for coming and doing this interview. This has been wonderful. I've listened to all of it so far. It's been great.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was saying I have a great niece, Madeline, who's absolutely adorable. So it's very nice to speak to you, Madeline.
Thank you. I think you sort of answered part of my question. I have a question about Kim and Shane that I have a friend who asked me to ask you about. And you mentioned that the multiple personality story that you guys wrote for Kim wasn't really working out. So maybe that's part of my answer. She was curious if you had a storyline in mind before Charles Shaughnessy decided to leave for both of them.
You know, again, I hate to say it was so long ago, and I had done other shows since then, and I kind of get lost in some of those, what were the storylines we were thinking of. But, you know, in my opinion, again, Kim and Shane were and still are one of those super couples. It was just something in the way they looked at each other, something in the way their voices sounded when they spoke to each other. You know, their body language meant so much. So at the moment, I can't remember what story we might have had for them, but, yes, we definitely would have kept on with them and kept them together.
Yeah. My other question is I've always been very curious about what Manhattan Lives was going to be about. I've heard about it, but I've never heard what it was going to be about exactly.
Oh, it was interesting because it was Deirdre and Drake. It was also Tony and Anna, Tao and Leanne. But it actually took place with them moving to Manhattan and getting involved. And, again, you know, they were split up when it started. But it was really all involved in them, believe it or not, in a sort of in a Trump Tower kind of situation. And it was a very sophisticated environment that they were not, you know, we see them in Salem and we don't necessarily see them as the sophisticates that they really are. And so it was sort of a fish out of water, but they acclimated very well. But it was, you know, again, it was, I still have copies of it in my office, actually, because I love that project. And I have to dig that out again and look at it, because that's something we should revisit, because that was a pretty good one.
I just remember reading about it in Soap Opera Digest about the time Teo was on Santa Barbara, just thinking, oh, this sounds so much fun. I wish, and I would really love to see
it
would happen.
It was a lot of fun. Yes, so was I. But I still remember being in one of those meetings, and I remember Ken coming in and saying, oh, by the way, I have an announcement. He said, oh, he says, yes, Deirdre's having a baby next week. And we were like, what? What? And that's really when there was the whole, her situation with, is it John, her older son? So that was kind of an interesting situation for all of us to find that out. But, you know, that was another interesting and fun time, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank
you
very much.
I love revisiting those things. Thank you.
I actually had a question from the friend of mine who couldn't be here today, but I wanted to ask, maybe you remember, this is far back, with the Salem slasher storyline way back when Tony, you had Andre in the basement and he turned out killing
right.
the victims and stuff. There was a story that you determined the first victim of the storyline by pulling names out of a hat. And
no.
Police Sampler
no.
is the one that got the name out of the hat. Is that true?
No, that was not true at all. No. And, you know, the thing is with the Tony's story, Tony and Renee, you know, that was a story that suddenly took on a whole different dynamic because I'm sure some of you remember that Lee Dumont, who was Renee's mother, and there was a lovely, lovely story there, and unfortunately Brenda Benet, who played the character, committed suicide in the middle of the story.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I remember, you know, being in my apartment and watching TV and having them say, and at 10 o'clock, you know, information on the tragic suicide of Brenda Benet, and I was like, what? And unfortunately, that was getting on the line to NBC, and they confirmed it, and running to the studio and saying, well, you know, we've got 3 days in order to totally rewrite the story because of that tragic situation. So, you know, when you talk about how do stories evolve, suddenly it's you deal with the cards you're dealt, and sometimes you get a really good hand.
Mm-hmm. Another question, how did the character of Victor Kiriakis come about?
Well, you know, it was Victor was came initially. He wasn't Beau's father, but we were looking for, and I think it might have been again Brian Franz, who I know a lot of people know is the president of ABC Daytime Disney. Who again, I think I credit Brian with so much of the success of Daytime in the 80s because he had such and still does has such a strong sense of story. I still remember sitting with him down in the marina and talking about the Kim and Shane storyline, and really he's very committed to good storytelling. And, you know, I believe he was the one, along with Susan Lee, who was there too, wanted to bring in, you know, the darker side and somebody to actually be the villain in a sense of the show. And when he was on the docks, you know, again, brainstorming, we kind of thought of threw around a couple of different ideas, and I brought up the idea of him being Beau's father and related to Caroline, you know, them having had their love story. And that was, again, one of my favorite stories that was written because it had so many layers and so many levels. And then, of course, John is just so terrific. John Aniston, when I say John. So, and Caroline, Peggy McKay, just, you know, pulled that story off beautifully. So that's sort of where he came from. But, you know, again, Brian wanted a, you know, Falconetti kind of character from Rich Man, Poor Man in those days, and that was Patch. And he was just going to be there for a short time, as we said, and suddenly he was such a dynamic actor that he stayed on for a very long time, and I know he's missed greatly.
Yes. So when Pat Falcon Smith's started to write for Days in 81. She brought in the Bradys and the Demiras.
Mm-hmm.
What were the inspiration for bringing them on?
Well, it's, you know, Pat, again, was brought up in, she did a lot of primetime television early on, and then she had also worked with Erna and also at the same time Bill Bell did, Erna Phillips, you know, who created soaps. And Pat was always of the belief that you really needed to look at a canvas and try to get, you know, the different strata. And we had worked on General Hospital. We had just come off General Hospital. And I think Joe had worked over there. I know Teo did, Joe Muscolo, and really wanted to get that sort of international, you know, wealth, you know, coming into Salem and then really getting the blue-collar Bradys. And it was all about, you know, Roman came in as the next-door neighbor of Tom and Alice. He used to cut their yard. And really, Sean and Caroline came in, I think, if I'm correct, at Roman and Marlena's wedding. So, you know, it was really trying to, again, as I say, get those very diverse levels of economics that can really help tell story.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, as I said, she was, I think, brilliant in those areas.
With our soaps failing, what do you think they're doing wrong, and what do you think they need to do to modernize?
You know, the soaps
bring
now?
The ring up. Mm-hmm.
Boy, you know, again, I'm not here to criticize at all what they're doing because I don't really know. All I know is what I think people need to be able to relate to the characters. People need to not be, I hate to say jerked around, by characters doing things for sake of story. You know, the story should come out of the characters' personalities, and that's what you have to look at. You know, you would, when we would sit down and do a story, you'd say, well, what is the best thing that could happen to this person? What's the worst thing that could happen? And then try to take it from there and kick around ideas, you know. And I don't know what they're doing now, but, you know, one of the reasons the ratings are so low, and we all know this, is now there are just so many choices. And as I used to say, I think one of the things that hurt daytime television was the fact that now everybody has access to everything, in the magazines, in interviews. You know, there are so many spoilers that it's not, what's going to happen tomorrow? You know, and Survivor was the first show, which was a reality show, that came on the air where nobody knew what the end of the story was. And they, as we probably all know, you know, they had contracts where if anything was leaked, they lost every cent that they had in that, you know, and they would be sued for, I think it was like $10 million, anybody who participated. So people watched that show and said, I don't know what's happening tomorrow. Even American Idol and, you know, all of these reality shows, they're fresh, and that's how it used to be in daytime. So I don't know if it can ever capture, you know, what it was before, but I think all they have to do is be telling good character-related stories because that's what soaps are about. They can't compete with anything else, in my opinion.
You've written for so many angsty characters. They have complex psychological storylines, like the trauma that you talked about with Kimberly Brady and Steve
right.
Johnson, such like that. Do you actually have a background in psychology yourself?
No, I don't, but it's interesting because what happened, and I'm not sure where it came from. I was brought up in a very conservative, religious environment with the most fantastic parents and aunts and uncles and wonderful sister Judy, who might be listening. Hi, Judy, if you are. And I was really, really lucky. I also grew up in Anaheim by Disneyland, so that was my babysitter. And so I had all these kind of interesting emotional things going on. And I really studied writing and art, but when I would write a long-term story, I would actually call a psychologist and give it to them so that I could make sure that the dynamics were right in the characters. And usually they would say, I should be a psychologist. So I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if it's a genetic thing. I don't know what it is. But for some reason, I seem to have some kind of an understanding of human behavior that I think helped along the way, I think.
In the chat room, they were wondering if they could get your novels on iPad.
Well, supposedly, yes. You know, as I said, they're right in the process right now of figuring out all of the marketing. But, you know, when I had spoken to them, I spoke to them at the launch for Ken's book, and I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, but if you haven't, it's a fascinating read to hear about Ken's family history and Betty. I was lucky enough to meet Betty and work with her, who was an amazing woman. But it's really a fascinating history of them, and then a really good insight into the show. And when I was at the book launch, they said that, yes, they are planning to, you know, make it available for Kindle and iPad and, you know, whatever. So, you know, that I know is the intent. So hopefully that will happen, because I would like to read it that way. I'm waiting to get my new iPad for my birthday coming up. So there we go.
When you were writing, there were so many location shoots that used to go on, especially, you know, with the Kim Shane in Miami and Bo and Hope in New Orleans and such. Was it the producer's idea to take, you know, to take the show on the road and do those location shoots, or was that something that you wanted to write and you fought to put on the screen?
No, usually, you know, we can come up with stories, but it's really the producers who would say, you know, we have the money to do a remote. And, you know, right now the budgets are slashed so incredibly that, I mean, it's phenomenal to me that they're able to produce, you know, the quality that they do for the amount of money that they have now. It's just, it's unbelievable. But, you know, when we were doing General Hospital, we did a lot of location shooting because there was so much money ABC had at the time. And, you know, there were only three networks, and you had, you know, three choices of what to watch, and you didn't even really have VCRs at the time. So they put so much money into it. And Shelley Curtis, who came over from General Hospital, who I think you probably all know, and who also was a terrific producer, and great with story and fabulous with actors. And, you know, she had a great eye for actors. And I think she's directing on All My Children now, by the way. But she had done a lot of the location shooting, the second unit stuff at General Hospital. So she was really familiar with all of that and very adept at that. So, and, you know, I have to mention Al Rabin, who was also brilliant and, you know, like the heart and soul of Days of Our Lives for so many years, who was just an amazing, amazing producer. I was so lucky to work with so many of those great people. So, you know, again, you have great actors that have great chemistry, and then you have behind-the-scenes people that really work well together, and I was lucky.
Would you go back to writing soaps, or did you feel like you've done that already and you just want to move on?
You know, I always say I wouldn't go back to writing soaps, but at the same time, it's such a draw to me, and I see that in writing these novels because I love the storytelling process. So, you know, I'll never say never, but at the moment, I'm just really enjoying this. I mean, I like being able to go and sit at the Chateau Marmont, you know, in Hollywood and sit there with my computer and in the sun and, you know, not worry about, you know, scripts and all of that. It's a pretty good life to be able to do that, so... yeah, kind of like what, you know, way things are going right now.
When you were writing on Days, how much would viewer reaction influence what you would write?
You know, in reality, it didn't. It really didn't have that much of a reaction, only because you're so far ahead. And in those days, you know, it's different than it is now. You didn't have instantaneous reactions generally. And the problem that they have now is, because of the way the budgets have been slashed so much, the shooting schedules determine that, I think right now there are stories written or even taped through August. And it used to be that we were 2 weeks ahead. That was it. So if something wasn't working and you're watching the show, it was usually as a writer you would realize when it wasn't working. And if people really hated something, you would take a look at it and go, okay, you know, we really need to rethink who this character is, rethink where the story is going, and then analyze it and make our decisions. But generally, the support for the actors is fantastic, as long as it just doesn't come across as, oh, it's a fan club that's doing it. If it's genuinely about the story, then if it's about the story, people listen. If it's just about an actor, they have a tendency not to listen as much, at least in my experience.
Okay. Well, we're actually about out of time now, but Sherry, thank you so much for coming on our show today. And I know everyone's excited to read these Days of Our Lives novels and revisit our favorite super couples. And I look very much, we'll make sure and put a shout out on our blog once we get more information about where we can find these books and get them out
to
people.
Okay, but can I just say one thing about that? Because I'm just into the second one, and there's going to be a third one and hopefully a fourth. If people want to go to my Facebook page and tell me who they miss and who they'd like to see, I'm more than happy to take suggestions, too. There's no problem with that. So, you know, if anybody wants to give me some ideas, I'm more than happy to take them.
Okay. So everybody go to Sherry Anderson's Facebook page and let them know what you think.
Yeah,
okay,
fantastic.
Sherry.
Okay, well,
thank you.
It was so enjoyable. Thanks so much for everybody calling in, and thank you guys for just being so gracious.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.